Are we recording?
We are recording.
Would you like some mundane chit chatter that you could put at the start of the pod and then cut away to the
Absolutely.
theme tune?
Absolutely. You know, I love a bit of that.
My stag do, the date is the 18th of May, which
Okay.
I have now
Am I invited?
realized you are indeed. However, you might want to rethink it because I've now realized that is the League One playoff final day. So my question is, now we have Neil Harris, do I need to rearrange that?
No.
Cut to the theme tune.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the UTAS Preview Show. My name is Julian Roberts, and I'm back with the father of Wesley Warland, Jordan, to look ahead to Neil Harris's first game as United manager down at the Abbey. Jordan, there is only one place to start. Yesterday evening, you sent a photo to the group chat.
Oh, right. I wonder where this is going. Okay, yeah.
It's a very visual thing, but maybe we'll post it on Twitter just to get it. Just to get it really in front of the UTAS faithful, but it's dated from 2003. And George, do you want to talk us through it?
What, just the backstory of the photo or what I'm
Yeah, the
thinking
outfit more than
and
anything.
my life
The
choices
outfit,
going
yeah.
on at the time. Firstly, I would like to thank Terry for posting it. Not seen you for a long time. Good to hear that you're doing well, Terry, and listening to the pod. Also, would like to point out it was Terry's decision to use the word famous in
Yeah, I was just about
the
to bring that
description
up.
of myself. That wasn't me. I mean, is he calling me or the pod or both famous? I mean, we are double FSA nominated, so perhaps.
Correct.
But the photo itself is from the Bridge the Gap campaign that we did to, help the club from not going under, and the whole, if you raise X amount of money, we, the board of directors, will match it. And don't worry, we won't do anything like sell Dave Kitson. Oh no, wait, hang on a minute. We're going to sell Dave Kitson
We're
for
going to do exactly
peanuts.
that. Yeah.
So I walked, it was a group of, it was quite a small group of us, I think like four or five. We walked from Royston to Cambridge on a match day. There was another group, I don't know who they were, but they walked from Ely to Cambridge, which I think is the bigger walk, so well done them.
Yeah.
Raising money, and yeah, I can't remember how much I personally raised, but you
Was
know
it?
it...
I didn't realize it was fancy dress, though, as well. Was that just a.
one of the persons on the walk did do it in a full Marvin suit, and
Yeah,
that's
fair.
kind of been overshadowed by the fact that I had a pair of really baggy, now popular again, bootcut jeans on. Sort of
Funny.
explaining to some other pals who saw the photo, that this was just before like the indie sleaze era. So it was before the skinny jeans and the cardigans and all those great attires and from the mid to late noughties that I lived in. And I can't wait for those to become like a fancy dress theme for a party. We've had like the 80s and the 90s. Surely noughties are going to be like the next theme at your Christmas do, and that's where I'm just going to absolutely be in my element.
You've still got the wardrobe ready.
Hopefully it won't be as infamous as like a Cambridge United Christmas party where someone punches Leon Davis or whatever it was. But yeah.
You never know, mate. Mate, look, I consider you quite a stylish individual, but clearly you're a bit of a late bloomer in that department.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I'll take the compliment
The
of of I'll
compliment
take the
with
compliment of being
the.
stylish, and
It's got a bit of a backhand to it, though, hasn't it?
a little bit. I feel like my Eras tour would be right up there with Taylor Swift's in terms of different looks and so forth.
I've been saying that for years, George. Come
I
on, let's get to the football. There's plenty to
was
talk
going to
about.
say,
So,
actually, I was going to say, when you said one place to start, because you obviously mentioned my son at the top of this
little
pod,
Wesley.
little Wesley. I just wanted to offer an update to anyone that really cared, which is probably no one, about a comment that I put in the think I think it was the last preview pod that I was on, where I mentioned that little Wes goes to football training on Wednesday morning. Sorry, no, not Wednesday morning, on Sunday mornings. Too many W's there, and there's a dad there that I think might be James Brophy. I managed to in a
non-creepy
way sneak a photo of this fella. It's not James Brophy. I don't think it is.
You showed me the photo last week. I think we're going to have to put this on Twitter and let people decide because it's definitely him.
It's not a pod that's making me look particularly good, mate. If we're putting photos of my dress since age 16, 17, and also a photo that I've snuck in sort of a stalkerish style that might or might not be James Brophy. It might just be a bearded person.
The important thing, George, is that you weren't taking that photo dressed like you were in the other photo, because then I think that's the combination makes you look really bad.
I saw this person that may or may not be James Brophy, their child scoring a goal and held back from making a comment about one goal in 100. You know, which I think I'll continue to do every Sunday morning, because I'm either going to confuse someone who has no idea what I'm talking about, or I might get a slap from James Brophy.
Yeah, they'll probably miss, mate, so I wouldn't worry too much about it.
big game for him on Saturday.
Big game for him on Saturday. But look, the reason I mentioned young Wesley there is because obviously we're playing Blackpool on Saturday. And
oh, mate, of course.
Wesley is one of the few to have crossed the divide. I'm not having that, I just couldn't think of what to say. Wes Houlihan, obviously a bit of a Blackpool legend as well. So
can I give you another one? Because I was thinking about...
Well, I've got one. Jensen Weir's there now, I think.
Oh, nice. So that means he's going to score on Saturday, right?
Almost definitely. I think he's there now. Go on. Oh.
Well, I was just going to say, like, it's always good to think of nostalgia on these preview pods of, like, a previous meeting with Blackpool.
Yeah.
But when I was looking at the head-to-head, got to go back to 95, the last time we beat them. Nice pre-Julian Roberts date there. So I thought, well, the obvious Blackpool... Nostalgia trip is the big day out in Cardiff, which was ruined by being smashed by a much better Blackpool team. But Blackpool, their left back that day, I'm never any good at saying his name. Tommy Yashin. Who then of course came to play for us. I think we were at a conference, weren't we?
Yeah, something like that. It's a bit early foggy days for me, but yeah,
he scored one of the best goals I've ever seen in front of the NRE. Which was on, God, was it the volley? I think it was on the volley, but it was like in injury time and we were like 3-0 down. It was like the most best pointless consolation goal I've ever seen us score.
We're going to have to dig that out, aren't we? We're going to have to try and dig that out. We're going to have so much to post on Twitter after this pod. Talking of digging stuff out,
did you get your consecutive free kick answer?
So I was just putting a running order together just now, and I thought, God, it's not a lot to go in this. And I thought, what was it that we were talking about on Sunday that I definitely haven't researched at all? I haven't, George, to be honest. And who was it? Was it Dan that asked the question?
I think it was Dan.
Dan followed up
after Monday's pod saying, yeah, sorry, guys, it is a tough question. I was just thinking to myself, I can literally only think of us scoring two free kicks in the history of going up United. And one was Danny Andrew the other week, and one was Wayne Hatswell. So I've got no chance of thinking two consecutive.
I can think of Luke Berry at Crewe. He scored a free kick up there.
Oh, he scored one against Blackpool away.
Oh, hang great on. Shot.
No, we didn't win that game, did we?
No, it was a draw. It was 1-1. He scored a beauty against Blackpool, actually, from my memory. So there's a couple.
It's like we planned this.
Yeah. Apart from that, though, oh, well, hang on. I mean, Ryan Donaldson at Wembley.
Just that little one, yeah.
Just that quite little sort of little matter of Ryan Donaldson at Wembley.
She left it for Liam Hughes, but whatever, yeah.
Yeah, whatever.
Hughesy scored one, no, maybe, from distance.
Against Tamworth.
Yeah.
In that promotion season. God, it's mad where you keep these bits of knowledge, isn't it? Do you know what you need? You need Tom Walker absolutely firing for this. He'll rattle off about five or six. So maybe it's one that we keep chipping away at, Dan. But if anyone can suggest, not just United free kicks, or maybe send through your favourite ever United free kicks, because we can keep it. We'll keep chatting about.
Why
it
would
in coming
it not
weeks.
Be United free kicks?
Because it's just quite general, isn't it?
Games that we've conceded goals in consecutive games that we've conceded goals from free kicks would be a more fruitful answered one.
If anyone's got an answer to games that we've scored consecutive free kicks in, obviously let us know. But also let us know your favourite United free kicks. Full stop. Jord, how's your week been? Because it feels like, I was just thinking about it, this feels like it's been quite a quiet week for United, given the sort of the chaos of the one week a manager leaves and all the anticipation for who it's going to be. Then he arrives and then all the chat about the new man and then the first game. And it feels like it's not business as usual. Obviously, it's his debut home game on
starting
Saturday.
Starting to reset, isn't it?
Starting to get back into the rhythms of it. And then obviously we've got Christmas to throw that all up in the air. But quite a quiet week.
I'm not quite there yet in it sort of feeling normal. I do think it'll take a good few games before you'd be like, yeah, Bonner's gone. You know, so it's not, you know, I get what you mean. It has definitely calmed down, but it still feels a bit peculiar and it feels a bit odd. I guess if we had managed to see the presser, which we didn't manage to do, it would have been good to sort of have that as well to kind of sort of settle us and see how he sort of speaks about games, you know, pre-game, because we only really had the post-match stuff on Saturday. But no, you're absolutely right. Like it definitely does feel like a returning to normal, even though it does still feel a little bit odd. And yeah, I'm just really hopeful that going into Saturday, without putting too much pressure on everyone, it would be great to see what they have picked up or what they've had drilled into them this week. Obviously, Neil Harris only had a small period of time, maybe even a session with them ahead of the Charlton game. So good that he's going to have like a full week with them. Good that actually that's not going to be a disrupted week, which you quite often get at this time of the year with the weather and so forth. So it's absolutely what we need, because obviously going into Saturday, it's going to be a really difficult game. And I just think in general, these next two, I think a lot will be riding on that Exeter game because they're in such a rut and we really need to kick them while they're down. But the following two games after that, two really tough away games. So you kind of look at this sort of back-to-back home games and think, well, really do need to be getting at least 3 points, but ideally four, to kind of offset that trickier part of the festive period. Not that Blackpool at home isn't tricky. So yeah, so hopefully they've had the time this week to sort of put some plans in place and come up with a plan for taking on Blackpool, because they'll need that. Like I think the Saturday's going to be a really difficult game because it's the classic 3-5-2 that we always struggled against under Bonner. You know, we've only got one fit striker, so how are we going to match up against the back three? All those questions that for the best part of 4 years Mark Bonner couldn't answer, Neil Harris has now got a very early opportunity to show us what he can do and tinker to come up with that. But yeah, really a really difficult game. We'll find out more from your pal in a bit about how, you know, Blackpool like to, you know, have a lot of the ball and come undone against teams that sit back and sit deep. So what has Neil Harris spent this week sort of doing in terms of sort of preparing for a game where we're probably not going to have much of the ball and have to be that defensive playing on the counter side?
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I was thinking about it this week, and maybe I'm wrong here, but I actually thought of any game to follow up Saturday, this is actually pretty ideal. I'll tell you for why, because A, it's at home, which I think will give it a sort of natural bounce anyway, just, you know, maybe a bit of a reinvigorated crowd as well behind the team. B, Blackpool are very good, but they're not the best team in the league. So they're as we'll hear from Jack in a minute, they got found out at home to Northampton. It seems like they've got that sort of result in them. So I think play our cards right, and I think we can definitely match them. And C, I think even if we don't and if we lose, it's very easy to go, well, you know, they've got one of the top scorers in the division. They are going to be up in the top seven. It's no, losing to a team like that at home is no disaster, right, in itself. So I feel like there's a way we can, anything that happens on Saturday, what I'm saying is it's much better than having Exeter now. Because I think if you have Exeter now, you have to win, because it doesn't really matter any other situation.
Definitely.
So I think it gives us another game, sort of find out a bit more. He'd find out a bit more about the team. I'm not saying it's a free hit. Is that what you're about to say?
I'm not saying it's a free hit. But no, you make a really valid point. Like Exeter is the bigger of the two.
Exactly.
We have to really be getting 3 points in that. Yeah. So yeah, if you play that one first, the pressure is there.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you want to play that one with more of the new manager bounce, but I don't think there's much in it. But yeah, it would be, yeah, there is there is an element of Saturday where you go, if you don't get 3 points or if you don't even get 1 point, you can live with it because they are, like you say, a good team. And I think really it's about, especially because it's Neil Harris's first home game, it's about putting on a performance. And I think that's what a lot of people in the fan base were sort of thinking towards the end of the Bonner days, that just defeats against certain teams is fair enough, but it was the manner of the performance. So if we can, you know, if he can get that sort of increased level out of certain players like he did on Saturday at Charlton, then I think people will leave happy, even if we don't get the 3 points.
Exactly. Should we hear a bit more from an actual Blackpool fan? Hear a bit more about what sort of threats they've got? Let's hear from my mate Jack.
Hello, this is Sam Massiface, and you're listening to Under the Abbey Stand.
Right, Utes fans, welcome along to this week's preview ahead of the Blackpool fixture at the Abbey this weekend. Now, usually when we do these previews, we go and speak to an expert from an opposition podcast or fan media or blog. But this week, we've got my mate from work, Jack Fallon. How are you, mate?
Hi, Jules. Thanks, mate. Yeah, expert would be probably a bit too aggrandizing for myself,
well,
I reckon.
Well, but, don't start on that note, mate, because I've bigged you up to all the UTAS boys.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, I'll try and live up to your lofty expectations there, mate.
Well, I'll tell you what, yesterday we were in the office together and I looked across the desk to see you chuckling along, listening to something in your headphones. I said, what are you listening to, mate? And he showed me and it was Under the Abbey Stand. And I thought at that point, got to get him on the show.
Yeah, I did. I really enjoyed it, actually, mate. Double awards nominated podcast.
Thank you.
So who am I to turn down the invitation of coming on? So
exactly.
Yeah, what a pleasure. What an honour.
Obviously, you are also a Blackpool fan. You're not just my mate from work.
Yeah.
And a certified member of the Jordan Rhodes fan club, from what I hear. We'll get on to Jordan Rhodes in a bit. Firstly, do you want to give us a bit of a sort of overview on how Blackpool season's going so far?
Yeah, mate, definitely. I think on the whole, if you look at it from a bird's eye view, I think Hull have been sort of fairly inconsistent, and that's been our sort of, if we had to sort of mark ourselves over the season, we're probably at like a B minus, I'd say. But we're sort of, you know, in and around the playoff positions. We haven't really sort of gone too well against sort of some of the bigger teams. You sort of come unstuck against your Boltons, your Peterboroughs. But then on the flip side of that, we did end Pompey's long unbeaten run and got a decent result against Stevenage. But sort of in recent weeks, we've come into a decent run of form, and we're also sort of getting players back who, you know, have been out injured or have had sort of long layoffs. So, yeah, sort of reasons to be cheerful at the moment, I'd say.
Yeah, inconsistency just does seem like the word, doesn't it? I was looking back at your last five fixtures and you backed up that 4-0 win down at Fratton Park with losing 2-1 at home to Northampton, which I suppose you sort of run a bit hot and cold, but when you run hot, it's scalding.
Yeah, and it's looking decent. I think, yeah, that's it in a nutshell, mate. We went to Fratton Park, a tough place to go notoriously, particularly this season, and put away a really good Pompey team. And then we're absolutely buzzing and thinking we need to back it up here, but it's probably the most Blackpool thing of all time to then come unstuck against a team like that. But, you know, a decent win last week against Carlisle, and we're now sort of heading to your boys.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we'll get to us in just a second.
Yeah.
But before that, what's the sort of expectations for the season like? Is this sort of what you expected, lingering around the playoffs, see if you can nudge your way in there, or are you slightly underperforming?
Yeah, I think if we get to the end of the season, we're not in the top six. I think you can probably put that down as a missed opportunity this year. I think, you know, it's not the hottest take in the world to say this isn't the best League One division of all time. I think anything probably outside of the playoffs is probably a disappointment. I do think if we just sort of keep in the mix, teams will naturally fall away. And I don't know what it is about our club, but for some reason, we've just got an insane record going into the playoffs. I think the most successful team in the playoffs in the Football League, just to slide that one in there. So I like to think that, you know, if we're sort of in the pack in these sort of your Marches, your Aprils of this world, we'll have a decent fist of it by the end of the season.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about a couple of key people at Blackpool. So the manager, Neil Critchley, obviously took you up from this division last time you were down here, I think. I said that with enough confidence.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely spot on, mate. Nice one.
So I assume the opinion around him is pretty pretty strong, because I'm right that he left to be, was it Villa's assistant manager or something? It was a bit of a strange story to him leaving, right?
Yeah, so he took us up in the COVID, the restart year, and we went really well in the championship the first year. We were up, I think, sort of around October, November time, we were well up there in the playoffs and sort of finished around your kind of sort of 14th, I think it was, and had bought into a long-term project, signed a long contract, and then just out of the blue went and joined Stevie G to put the cones out, Aston Villa. Obviously for him that didn't quite work
out.
What
a legacy.
I mean, look, there's some cones, he likes to get the cones down and play, but I think when sort of inevitably, I think the club was on the back foot for that. I think the club was maybe on the back foot, didn't really see that coming. And that sort of rolled into the following season, which led to, Michael Appleton being appointed, then Mick McCarthy as a bit of a break glass in case of emergency, which just didn't really work out. And then we had Stephen Dobby, former player, a bit of a cult hero, now academy boss, sort of take over for a little bit and unfortunately got relegated at the back end of last season. Dobby was in the running for the job, but I think everything sort of pointed towards Critchley coming back. And I think if you can sort of take the emotion away from that decision in the circumstances that he left, it is a pretty decent appointment. I think if anybody else in the sort of same mould as us in League One appointed Critchley, we'd probably have looked on slightly jealously. With jealousy in how normal people would say that. But I think, it's taken a bit of time, but I think he's got, a decent section of the fan base back on side. He loves a good fist pump after a big win, which we've luckily seen a lot of this season. So, and I think by his own admission, he's probably had to go away and sort of, he knew that he was coming back into probably quite a hostile environment in the way that he left. Didn't go well for him at Villa, didn't go well for him at QPR. So I think we're probably seeing like Critch 2.0 this time around, slightly less pragmatic. He's on the front foot quite a lot. So, I think he's probably in quite a good moment with the fan base right now.
Interesting. And in terms of how he plays, you sort of started touching on it there. Is that different to when you last got promoted from this division? And how does he normally set you up?
Yeah, for sure. No, there's definitely been a change from Critch 1 to Critch 2. This year, he has been all over 3-5-2 with wing-backs. And he's getting it's sort of finally clicked for him now, I think. It took a little while the first time we had him. It was very much 4-3-3, straight out of a sort of Borussia Dortmund, Liverpool playbook. Eventually mixed it up and made us more solid at the back before getting us promoted. And I think he's really stuck to his guns with 3-5-2 this year. But he's getting a lot out of the team, which I think is good. Like I said before, like he was very pragmatic in his first couple of, in his first spell for us. And this time he's been sort of really on the front foot. Like we've been putting teams away 4-0, 3-0. Scoring loads of goals. And I'd assume he'll probably go again this weekend. He sort of fell into the trap a lot, particularly in the championship year, of setting up to sort of nullify teams rather than actually play the way that he wants to play. So, I'm pretty chuffed that we're seeing more of that this year.
I mean, I assume a lot of those goals are being scored by a certain Jordan Rhodes, who anyone who has followed any amount of lower league football will know the name of as a bit of a cult hero. I think he still holds the record for League One most goals scored in a single year for Huddersfield.
I'd love to see him do it this year. I'd love to see him break that record.
Look, I've said it with enough confidence, so it's got to be true. He has scored 13 already this year, so he's only second behind Alfie May. I assume he's the main man to watch, but is there anyone else that we should be keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think the obvious answer for me is definitely Rhodes, a player who I think, is really sort of not clicked after like this time 10 years ago was just an absolute archetypal lower league bagsman. But he has absolutely smashed it this year for us. And it's just the type of goals he's scoring as well. Like there's someone somewhere you sort of on first view in real time, you think it's like a deflection, but he's actually, when you look at it again, he's shaped his body in certain positions to get the angle, and it's just incredible for a player of his age, because I think we were crying out for some experience, and then when we got Rhodes, it was a little bit like, oh no, not that experience, but then we got him, and he's been absolutely unreal, and I hope we keep hold of him, because we've got him on loan from Huddersfield, so we're just absolutely praying there's no recall. A couple of other players who've gone really well this year. I think CJ Hamilton, is his redemption arc is absolutely out of this world.
Go on, tell us about
back
it.
Back end of last, well, he was, we signed him the year we went up, first year with Critch. He started off like a train, went really well. His pace is absolutely lightning. I don't know who you'll be having sort of down the wings this weekend, but he's got absolute nitro in his boots, that lad. But he just sort of became a bit of a scapegoat for the fans, didn't quite adjust to championship life. Really sort of unfancied. And I think at the sort of back end of last season, I think we were all like, well, that's probably the end of him. Very surprised that he was sort of still getting a sniff in the team. But yeah, this year he's just been a completely sort of different player. I think he's chipped in with the most assists for us this year. Like his pace is just absolutely liquid in this division. And
I can tell you he's got the joint most assists in the league, mate.
Crikey. Wow. Well, there you go, mate. And so I think
that says
it all, doesn't it, really? So yeah, I'm really looking forward to CJ playing at the weekend. He's just signed a new contract as well. So be absolutely buzzing. And then probably the last lad I'd say is Karamoko Dembele, sort of a lad we've got on loan this year. I think he played for Celtic when he was like 14 or 15 or something. I have to double check that. But he has got a great ability to take players on, to beat players. I think you can probably, in this league, you can find players to be sort of fairly one-dimensional. And I think he's a real sort of difference maker for our team. He sort of sits sort of just behind the front two. Just got a really good eye for sort of beating a player, taking him on. We sort of use him a little bit from the bench, getting him up to sort of match fitness. But now he's starting. He's a real handful, definitely.
And how about the other side? So if you were on Neil Harris's scouting team or coaching team,
could happen, mate.
You never know. You did your performance planning the other day. That might be the next step. Look,
absolutely.
How would you target Blackpool if you were Cambridge United? Is there something that you've seen as a pattern that they don't like other teams doing? Is there a weaker side, maybe an area of the pitch that you don't trust?
Yeah, I think there's been a couple of times this year where, and I know football and life itself, Jules, is not this binary, but Blackpool are notoriously rubbish in December, and they're also notoriously rubbish against teams that sit deep and get hit on the break. So I don't know if Cambridge fans will be rubbing their hands together after hearing that, but there's been a couple of times this year where we have been really struggling to break teams down. And if teams are able to absorb that amount of pressure and catch us on the break and get in behind, potentially where the wing-backs are pushing up quite a lot. All our wing-backs love getting forward, Andy Lyons, Owen Dale and CJ Hamilton. We lost to Derby quite handsomely earlier in the year, and they just, you know, it's a classic sort of Paul Warne team display of just big lumps at the back heading it out and then just the quick lads getting in and squaring across the face of goal. So if Cambridge can ride that out, I think they'll have a chance, which is tough to say. And it's something that, particularly under Critchley, we've never really sort of managed too much to do. I know, like I said, people will say, oh no, we did it against this team, we did it against that team. But yeah, if I'm Neil Harris, that's potentially what I'm doing there.
Yeah, that makes sense. And just before I come to your prediction, I just realised that Saturday is going to see Jordan Rhodes going up against Michael Morrison and potentially Ryan Bennett as a centre-half partnership. I mean, that's like rewind
well
10 years.
That.
Yeah, I'm all over that.
I'm well into that. That's what is it that used to be on? It'll be on like Sky Retro now, like Masters Football.
Yeah.
Like, I'm seeing those boys there in 4 to 5 years if it was still going. But
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Interesting one about Michael Morrison, because he scored that like unbelievable goal, didn't he, this year?
Yeah.
Like, fair play to him.
I mean, it says a fair amount about the way that we were attacking at that point, that like it took a 36-year-old centre-half to carry the ball half the pitch and score as the only like attacking thing we could do all game. But no, I was going to ask you for your prediction.
Yeah, it's...
What are you thinking?
We still got to play our second round FA Cup game. We're going quite well in the Football League Trophy. I think we've got another game on the side of Christmas. So we've got quite a lot of fixtures coming up, and I just want to get through them unscathed. Like, I just don't want to start losing momentum. So there's one part of me that takes a point all day long, but then there's another where I think we could turn up and sort of stick 2 or 3 past you. So I'll go 2-1. I'll go 2-1, Jules.
2-1, Paul.
Yeah.
2-1 Paul, and me and you having a wonderful day out together.
That's the main thing. As long as football and friendship is the winner, then always. I'm not bothered. So
always. Thanks for joining UTAS, mate. Not forever, but thanks for joining UTAS for this episode.
Oh yeah, just for this.
Just for we'll see how it goes, mate.
We'll see what happens, mate. But yeah, nice one, Jules. Cheers, mate.
Thanks very much, Jack, for that expert analysis of Blackpool. George,
Well, you say expert. At the very start there, he did refer to Borough as a big team. So I did switch off slightly from what Jack was saying there. Well, gritted teeth as I made the rest of my notes whilst listening to that ahead of the preview. I like that you've gone with a pal from work, because if I heard correctly, you had a little work reference banter in there. You said something about performance planning. Is that a word term?
Oh, of course it is.
Love that. Yeah. Love that.
You're a manager, George. You must have to do those.
Firmly in that middle management bracket, yeah. It's horrible. And he also, and your mate Jack also said the term bagsman, which I don't think podcasts really say.
I'm having bagsman. 100%.
I like it. I mean,
that's
it.
A problem. That's a
I'm
problem.
Having, with... I'm having it as a term, but I don't want it as a reality on Saturday. I don't want to see Jordan Rhodes with a brace.
Well, speaking of, how much does he scare you? I mean, we've just come up against the one man who scored more goals than him in League One, Alfie May, bagged.
Yeah, of course.
How do you feel about coming up against Jordan Rhodes on Saturday?
Something about just seeing a player playing against your team where you know that in the past someone has spent £8 million on him, that kind of makes you chuckle to yourself. And you think, like, you sit there looking at the lineup thinking, like, if I totaled all that together, how far away do I get from £8 million? But yeah,
very.
I think it's worth pointing out that with Michael Morrison and also, of course, Mr. Ryan Bennett, who I think will probably come back in on Saturday, you've got two very experienced heads there who are hopefully wily and mature enough to know how to deal with a big sort of target man who's got a ton of experience at this level. I'm not saying that they will stop them from scoring. You know, Alfie May scored on Saturday, but I do feel, compared to sort of Cambridge defences of past years, if you have a big name striker there, I do feel a little bit more reassured. But yeah, absolutely will be a big challenge come Saturday.
Absolutely. It's actually kind of mad to be facing the two informed strikers in the division back-to-back weeks. So hopefully they've learned something from Saturday. How do you think?
I mean, Gassan got two at the weekend, so surely he's in.
That's what I'm talking about.
Absolute informed. Got one, should have had two the game before that if he tucks away that penalty. So who's really scared of who, Julian? Yeah.
True. Do you think their podcasts are talking about Gassan Ahadmi in the same way we're talking about once upon a time, £8 million Jordan Rhodes?
I wonder if their podcast is talking about the fact that we don't know how to play against three at the back. I do wonder, like, yeah, how are we going to sort of get bodies around Gassan and things like that?
Well, let me ask you this. You mentioned Ryan Bennett there as a player you expect to come back in. Is that a direct swap for Okadina? Or, I don't know if this is something that Harris has ever played a lot of, do you think we might match them 3-5-2 ourselves?
Well, this is a topic close to my heart and I have to be very careful about this. I've had it on good authority that Neil Harris does not play three at the back ever.
That doesn't surprise me in the least surprising news of today.
So I don't think we'll change our formation much from what we saw in Charlton, at Charlton, I should say, on Saturday. But the Okadina point's a really valid one. Like, it doesn't deserve to be dropped. Likewise, Morrison. I'd feel harsh saying, yeah, drop Okadina for Bennett. So it's a good headache to have, sort of figuring out what to do at the back there. But we spoke at the start about, you know, this week being sort of calmer and Harris having time with the squad. It's also kind of a reset, and any sort of past, you know, grievances or issues that might have been bubbling away behind the scenes are done with. You know, we've changed the management here. So if there was a reason that Bennett was out of the squad, you know, Bonner thinking he needs a rest or whatever, that's now come and gone, and it's up for Harris, up for Neil Harris to decide if he swaps him back in. So I think he will come in, just because I think we'll need that experience against a very good forward line. But it would be mighty harsh on Okadina, who hasn't done anything really, in my opinion, to warrant being dropped, and is just having that classic case in point of the more games you play, the better your performances seem to be.
Anything else you think he'll do going forward? I mean, personally, I think you're right about Ryan Bennett, but I'm not sure he'll change much else.
I guess the obvious sort of questions that you ask are the subs that came on away to Charlton that had such a good impression on the game and swung it back towards us. You know, your Jack Lancasters, your Thomases, like, did they do enough to warrant a start? So I don't know. I think if Cousins and Digby are fit to start, I'd stick with them in that sort of deeper double pivot. I think we need to be really good out of possession and you know, and playing on the counter. So they'll be key for that part. And then, yeah, the three behind our only fit striker, I guess it's difficult to warrant making sort of subs, but maybe Lancaster gets a go, given his sort of impact from the bench.
But potentially.
Don't have many options, do we? Don't have lots of sort of answers for that question about who we can and can't sort of swap in and change around.
I was thinking maybe, I don't know, I still think he the only change he realistically make is probably Bennett in for Okadina. But I was thinking, you've got George Thomas there. I wonder if maybe either Kaiko or Kachunga starts on the bench, and then he almost drops. So it's a bit more like a 4-5-1. So Thomas plays a little bit deeper still, not alongside Digby and Cousins, but not quite. I know that doesn't answer the question of how you're getting service into Gassan, but maybe it's about clogging the middle up a bit more and then just playing direct on either side. So it's maybe more of a 4-3-3, I suppose, is what I'm suggesting.
Do you not fancy a Sully Kaikai goal against his former employers?
Oh, there's another one. Yeah,
a little one in front of the South Stand just before half time, sort of
a little Sam Smith.
Yeah, a little hush into the Blackpool fans. I don't know. I think we'll try and sort of contain as long as possible, and then look to maybe bring in pace from the bench as the game gets into sort of the latter stages.
Yeah,
if we're still in it, in classic Bonner Ball style, you know, staying in it and then going for it late on, I wonder if then you might see, you know, I don't know, like a Janner or something crazy like that.
Gordon or...
Yeah. Gordon obviously got minutes away to Charlton and fits into that sort of category of kind of, you know, having a bit of a reset with a new manager. You know, maybe we see someone like that come on and try and stretch the game. And, you know, like Jack said in the preview there, like they have sort of been prone to being hit on the break. So, you know, maybe that pace on the counter there is something that we can play into.
That's the one thing that's really giving me like a bit of confidence going into this, really, is when Jack says there in the preview, you know, we don't like it. We're not brilliant at breaking teams down when they sit deep. And then, like you said, playing on the counter, like quick transitions, playing very direct. And that's how they've been found out a couple of times. That's the one thing that's giving me a bit of, not the one thing, to be honest, but that's what's giving me the most positivity here, because we know that Harris and Bonner, you'd call it Bonner ball there. I think you could easily probably call it Harris ball to an extent from what we know of him at previous clubs, at least, and a little bit of what we saw on Saturday, that is something that I think probably does play into our hands a bit of like how this squad has been coached and how they've sort of learned to play. You know, that isn't to say it's going to work, because the problem with that is if they go one up, as we've seen a million times, then suddenly everything changes a little bit, right? And you've got to find a different route back into the game. So it does give me a bit of confidence. So I think spirits are high going into it. And
it's going to be you know, naturally, it's going to be an interesting game because it's, you know, Harris's first home game and it's his first game after having that sort of extended period with the squad. But sort of ahead of his appointment or just after his appointment, you know, everything we sort of heard from people that, you know, either know him or know clubs that he used to manage, they all say, oh, you know, his style is defensive, his style is direct. Now seems more than ever, more than the Charlton game for sure, that we're going to see what exactly that might look like or what that might be. And we will obviously naturally come back and compare it to how Bonner played, because, you know, he was in charge for so long. But, you know, what is a Harris defensive performance compared to a Bonner one. And, you know, we've seen over the season with Mark Bonner in charge, you know, gradually sort of getting sort of deeper as we sit and as we counter. So if you think about start of the season and those great results against Oxford and Fleetwood and how we actually pressed and played quite high, and I you know, I keep coming back to that and thinking, you know, like that Oxford formula was such a great one that it would be great to see that sort of played out again, and you know, similar kind of profile team and squad and capabilities to Blackpool. So yeah, I wonder if we'll see something like that and it surprises us, or we will see something very kind of defensive and understand now what people were talking about when they say, you know, that's Harris's preferred style.
Well, you know, an interesting thing, I think you're right that this is going to be a pretty big like indicator. At this stage, it's probably only that, an indication to, like you say, how what a Harris defensive performance might look like. But something he did make a point of in his, I think it was in his joining press conference or interview, mm-hmm. he said, like, you know, something I want is people to hate playing Cambridge United. I want us to be a really hard team to play against. People don't like coming here. And I think that's something we lost. I think that is actually a big thing that we lost under Bonner. Just the nastiness, using that little old Cambridge thing in the right way. You know, we've talked about that mm-hmm. a few times, and it's felt like, because it can appear like quite meek and a bit, you know, people can walk all over you, which is sort of how it felt at the end if you look at Lincoln coming to the Abbey. And I think a big thing that Harris will want is that isn't what happens, especially at home. No matter who the team is, we're mm-hmm. always in the game. We're always playing to a certain standard. And it's just going to be interesting to see how that plays out, really. It might be ugly, but if it's effective, I couldn't care less.
Yeah, well, that's the point, isn't it? Like, that's a really, like, interesting one. Like, at what point do we start going, do you know what? I do care if it doesn't look good, even if it is effective. Like,
I don't think I do.
You know, could there ever become a point where you're like, oh, man, yeah, I want to freshen it up. And it's exactly what happened at Gillingham and you know, why he lost his job there was, you know, owner wanting more attractive style of football.
I mean, I'm telling you, if we're fourth,
I think
in
it's
any
safe
division,
to say that like game two, we're probably not there yet. So
no, I think you are thinking ahead there a bit, but I think I can safely say that if we're fourth in any division, I'd be pretty happy personally. But maybe that's just me.
Any division? So what, like conference? Conference?
Yeah, conference.
League two.
Buzzing. Yeah. All right. Give us your prediction.
I think I'm gonna go for 1-1.
Okay.
They are a hot and cold team, aren't they? Which I think you said in your preview can be inconsistent, but really recently they have been quite hot. But yeah, I think there's just a couple of things that might sort of get us back into the game. I think, yeah, the occasion of it being Neil Harris's first home game, you know, the buzz that must be around the training ground after sort of getting a 96th minute equaliser kind of feels a bit like a win. So yeah, I'm feeling optimistic. I think we can I think we'll get 4 points over the next two game weeks. So I back us to beat Exeter. And yeah, maybe get a bit of a fortuitous or sketchy kind of draw out of this one. But yeah, I'm going for it. 4 points and a happy Christmas.
That's wonderful to me. I'm going for a win.
Really?
I think we might win 1-0. I think it's going to be a classic. I think it's going to be horrible. I think we'll somehow score and we'll sit in, and it'll be a pretty terrible game of football to watch. Very frustrating for Blackpool fans, but I've just got a feeling. I think he's going to Neil Harris his way out of it, which would suit me just fine. Jord, pleasure.
Pleasure's all mine.
Let's wrap up
I'm off to Top Man to get some better jeans.
I was going to say, people, do send in your free kicks, but also if you've got any good jean recommendations for Jordan 20 years ago, then that'd be great. Let's wrap up with Adam Terasevic giving us a women's team review for November, which we missed last month due to being a bit too focused on our own awards and obviously the small matter of the manager changing. But here's a wrap up of everything that's been going on at Cambridge United women's football team over November.
Four games to bring you from United's women's team in what has been a quieter month for the Utes. Following September and October's busyness, there have only been two league games since I last spoke to you, but they have played in both cups, advancing in one, which is where we'll start. Mopping up October's fixtures, actually, United progressed in the National League plate with a 2-1 win over Keynsham Town. Goalless for nearly 80 minutes, United fell behind probably against a run of play, before coming back with an equaliser from Bella Simmons soon after. They headed to extra time, where Ruth Fox scored in the dying seconds to secure a comeback win. And next up in the plate will be Maidenhead United, giving United their second straight opponents from the South West Division in this tournament. On to a three-game November. First of two league games was an away trip to Chesham United. Ruth Fox continued where she left off against Keynsham, scoring a hat-trick of headers, the first of which in the first half and then two in the second half, which along with one from Stoiko Down gave United their half of a 4-1 win, meaning Cambridge sat third in the league after this one, really among the league's high flyers in a deserved spot based on how they've played this season. Something I said a month ago was how they found three or four players to score the goals that Wiltshire provided last season, particularly Stoiko Down and Fox, who scored in this one. And they go into games really aggressively. They keep it tighter at the back as well than last season. There have been a few high-scoring games, but they've only been thumped that one time against Wimbledon, who are top of the league. In a break from the league action, Cambridge matched up against MK Dons in the second round of the FA Cup. From the league above, and starting former U, Laura Mitchell, in midfield, this one was classic cliche game of two halves. United started well, and they took the lead through Stoiko Down, heading home from a corner before Lauren Webb denied MK from the penalty spot soon before the half. But in the second half, MK dialed up the pressure. They ultimately turned the game around. They scored direct from a cross around the hour mark. And then again, with about 5 minutes to go, to give them the win. But in his post-match comments, Darren Marjoram said the team would use this disappointment to fuel them in the coming weeks. He made real positive comments about how far the team have come this season. He refused to be negative about losing narrowly to a team from the league above, focusing on how they overcome tough moments better than last season. And overall, I get the impression that this is a strong unit. And I think Darren believes that they've got more talent in this squad than in previous seasons, which is a good sign. Finally, after four games unbeaten in the league, though, United finished November with just their second loss of the season, coming against QPR. This one pangs of a bit of disappointment. United were 2-0 up inside 10 minutes, a header from Abby Jackson and another from Stoiko Down. But QPR had pulled one back before half-time, and then they scored two in quick succession around the hour mark to completely turn the game on its head. Disappointing to lose ground on the top teams, and also they've let Leeds slip now in two straight games to go on to lose. Even the first was a bit out of the ordinary. But overall, the vibe of this game is that Cambridge still played pretty well. Their performance level hasn't really dropped. Even if this result was not ideal, they're still playing pretty well. But they haven't had the chance to put that result right. They haven't played since the 26th of November. One match against Worthing was called off, the only team Cambridge yet to play this season. And that will be played this weekend, actually, after over 20 days without a game. That game will mark the halfway point of the season and could see United back up to third again, just behind Norwich and Wimbledon, who are once again going really strong at the top, as they did last season, behind the eventual champions hashtag. Wimbledon, the top of the league, having handed that large defeat to Cambridge at the Abbey, whilst Haywards Heath and Cambridge City are the current teams in the relegation zone. Luckily, it doesn't look like we're having any teams that won't finish the season so far, like last year. And there could be a pretty good relegation fight on our hands, as Sudbury and Chesham are just a point ahead of Cambridge City, meaning there's four teams currently fighting for to avoid two relegation spots. And that's another month done of the season. This was a bit quicker, there's been less to talk about, and December is just a one-game month in itself, meaning I'll probably be back in the new year when we've got some more games to talk about.